And welcome back. How many family holiday gatherings have been ruined by dinner table arguments? When opinions differ on politics, social issues, or myriad other subjects, the festive atmosphere can go south in a hurry. Relationships can be severely damaged, even destroyed. How can we effectively deal with these situations or diffuse them altogether? Joining me to talk about that is Dr. Marva Robinson, licensed clinical psychologist with the Preston and Associates Psychology Firm. Let us know what subject you hope does not surface at tomorrow's dinner, and one that could possibly lead to a little bit of an argument or heated discussion. Dr. Robinson, welcome. Nice to see you again.
Thanks for coming back. Thanks for having me again.
You know, it's easy to kind of chuckle about this, mm-hmm. except that it's not funny. This can be a fairly serious problem, can't it?
It can be. It really can be. And so, especially with the timing of it being Thanksgiving and such a thankful moment, that you really don't want it to have a negative impact on the family. You want quite the opposite.
But we hear about this happening a lot. Mm-hmm. What is going on? I mean, is it just the fact that these folks get together perhaps rarely and maybe have had a little too much libation in the course of getting ready for the big dinner?
Now, that's quite possible. Someone may have had too much of the eggnog. But I think what happens is sometimes we misinterpret the position that someone else is coming from. And because we hold our own position so near and dear, any speech or talk against it feels like a personal insult. And so we personalize what should be a conversation. So it elevates from being a dialogue to a debate, and then it can quickly turn left.
This gets so bad that sometimes, I know you've said this, and we've heard others say it as well, that sometimes it's such a problem that people don't even want to get together.
Yeah, because you have family members that may have anxiety about what is the conversation going to be like. Yeah. Are we going to have to talk about whatever is the breaking news this day, and I just want an escape from it? So you do have some members that may dread going to dinner, or that, you know, moment of silence, because they know that there may be that one family member waiting to pounce on the topic of the day. And so
I heard a story just recently, in fact, in getting ready for this program, someone mentioned that when they go to a family gathering, if they see a certain car in the driveway, they turn right around and go home. They don't even want to get started.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, people who yell the loudest or, you know, cry the most are those that just may feel like they're not heard. And so sometimes if you look beyond the externalized behaviors to hear what the message really is, it's, you know, really not that bad of a bark. But communication, how we speak to people, is so critical.
Right. We'll get into that in a moment. I'm just curious. Obviously, you have professional ethics, but you've talked to people about this. Mm-hmm. What are the kinds of stories, the kinds of triggers that you hear most often?
Oh, my gosh. Triggers would be a family member bringing up a negative past memory that they may think is funny, but to another family member is very hurtful. Old stories about, you know, someone who may have, who's no longer present with the family. And so for some, it's about reliving that person's spirit, but for someone else, they may not be at that place in their grieving process. And so, breaking news, where you have families with these very controversial topics that are total polar opposites. And so these kind of subjects can very well ruin a dinner.
I wonder what it is. I mean, families are supposed to be close together, close knit. That's the way it's supposed to be. But what is it about people sitting down together as a family group where they feel that they maybe have a little more latitude in the things they say than they might say with people they're not so familiar with?
Well, because you think that your family knows your intentions, or they know where your heart really is, and so you think that you don't have to be so politically correct in your speech. So you kind of, you know, let things kind of slide. Whereas if you were out in public where people who don't know you, you may be a little bit more on your P's and Q's because they don't necessarily know the full person of who you are and your character. So, yeah.
Yeah. Familiarity breeds contempt, I think, is something that somewhere along the line. And our society today, this what we're talking about has been going on for a long time. But in this particular time, Our society is so polarized. I mean, you look at the political world today and the way people are screaming at each other and saying very, very negative things. That must be a contributing factor, too. People feel they have a little more freedom to say what they really feel.
Well, I definitely think that with the more social media emerges and the more technology that is used to be able to view private or public conversations, and the more we're able to view very violent interactions between people, it at a point it does start to desensitize us to what our public behaviors should and should not be. And so I think that may start a bit of a slippery slope. And it's unfortunate because just because you may look at someone who's influential using very derogatory terms, you may think that that gives you privilege or permission to do the same thing, and that is just not the case.
Does it make sense to establish ground rules when you're sitting down at the table and you know that you have people there that do have differing views on some of the things likely to come up? Do you just say, hey, we're not going to talk about politics today. We're not going to talk about gay rights or whatever it might be.
I think you definitely need to establish ground rules, but not so much about what topics not to discuss, but more about how the topics will be discussed. So ground rules that say, you know, we will respect everyone's opinion. We will not, you know, talk over each other. Everyone will have an opportunity to express their views in a manner that is heard and both respected. So I think ground rules more along the lines of the environment and the tone versus topics, because, you know, if someone says we're not going to talk about gay rights, but you have a family member who definitely does want to approach that topic, you've just, you know, X'd out half the family right there from engaging in discussion, and that's not productive.
And I guess by establishing ground rules at times, that can start the fight.
Yeah, you can. So you want to keep them minimal, but you want to keep them foundational. So as long as no one is swearing at each other, we will not raise voices, you know, no throwing, very basic rules, or, you know, even some family members may need to put a time on it because you may have someone who likes to give a monologue. So, you know, everyone will get a couple of minutes to speak, you know, and share their view. I think that's important. And also centering the conversation in, we are here to share and learn. It's not about promoting your agenda, but more along the lines of listening to differing views. I think when we let go of having to have an agenda, we allow the conversation to flow a lot better.
Right. Again, I want to encourage our listeners to get into this conversation because I think there is a lot to learn and a lot we can learn from them as well. We're talking with Dr. Marva Robinson, and we're talking about those sometimes heated dinner table conversations that take place when families and friends get together over the holidays for that dinner, and subjects come up that cause some perhaps inflammatory statements. If you'd like to get into this, tell us what subjects you hope do not come up at your dinner table tomorrow. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you prefer to send us a tweet, we'd very much like to hear from you at STL on air. One of the things that comes into play at times, I know, is humor. People trying to be funny, but sometimes they're not so funny.
Timing is everything.
Yeah.
Humor does break up the tension, just as food does. So, you know, dialogue during Thanksgiving, I would highly encourage it. I mean, nothing keeps the tension down than, you know, eating your favorite meal. And so humor can keep things lightly, but you want to make sure that you aren't making a joke with the intention of sliding someone else. You also want to make sure that your jokes aren't derogatory in terms where it can be offensive. Is this a joke that I would say in public? Is this a joke I would tell to my boss? And so keeping those kind of checkers in mind can help you determine if maybe your humor will come across well or not.
What do you think is the biggest mistake that the guest can make and the host or hostess can make?
You know what? I think one of the biggest mistakes we could make is not including everyone in the discussion, including children. You know, I think it's very important that children also are brought into the fold, as well as our adolescents, about today's topics, what's being discussed, what's happening in our world. And so sometimes when we leave them or exclude them from the conversation, it's almost as if we take their voice and we miss out on the innocent perspective that our youth have. And so I think that's a mistake that we can make.
Should you ask the children to leave the table if things get heated?
If things get heated where it becomes offensive and it's not age appropriate, absolutely. Mm-hmm. However, if you make sure you are discussing topics where you can keep the children included, that also is a checker for you to make sure that the tone and the content doesn't turn left. I think it's important to include our children in the discussions about today's topics, what may be debatable, how different people feel about it, because it's, you know, they're forming their opinions and personalities as well. And so who better to help to shape that than their families and them being able to be a part of that narrative?
Yeah, and as we have just discussed during the previous segment, we are encouraging children to become a part of this whole process of talking with their elders, if you will.
Yes, I heard that, yes. Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah. Again, going back to the triggers, I'll give you a couple of them and see what your advice would be. Let's just talk about politics. You know, that you've got Uncle Bernie hates Donald Trump and Aunt Lois loves Bernie Sanders. Okay. What do you do about these two?
You know, for those hot-button political talks, I like to play a game of switcheroo. So if you know who is likely to defend who, have them switch candidates and see if they can give both the pros and the cons to each person. What that does is it forces you to place yourself in a different perspective to see if you can understand and hear what the other person, you know, why they're so infatuated with that particular candidate. So if you switch roles, it kind of forces you to think a little bit outside of your box. And again, it helps you to let go of your agenda and live up to the purpose of learning more and having a discussion.
Right. Makes a lot of sense. We have some callers. Let's get them into it, and we can talk about other specific things when we continue. But we'll start with John calling from Overland. John, thanks for being with us.
Well, that was very quick. Thanks, John.
Sure.
You're welcome. The key word here in these discussions, whether it's a talk show like public radio, which does a great job of being nuanced, Fox and CNN, let's say, are not very nuanced when they discuss things. It's more like arguing.
You've noticed, have you?
So on public radio, you'll get your, as around a dinner table, I wish it would work that way. You say your position and then you make it clear, and then the other person gets time to talk. So in particular, I think Donald Trump's name will come up a lot, okay? I thought he was a buffoon at first. Now I think he's a racist, and here's why. He made a statement. This is the nuance I'm talking about. He made a statement that when white people are murdered, 81% or 85%, whatever he said, it was over 80% of the time, he said, were caused by blacks. And it's nowhere near true. It's about 14% of the time. Whites kill whites, blacks kill blacks. And also another nuance or something you never hear is white-on-white murder. White-on-white murder outnumbers black-on-black murder. Now, the black murder rate is much higher, and I'm sorry that it is, but there's more white-on-white murder, and you never hear any show about white-on-white murder. I brought it up at a family table, and they go, "You're nuts. Look at Chicago. Look at New Orleans," is what they say. But the whole country, there's more white-on-white murder. There has been every year for decades and centuries.
John, I think there are going to be a lot of conversations along the
Absolutely.
Lines that you've just described. And it gets, it gets very, very sensitive, doesn't it?
It does.
When you get to, I mean, how quickly it can degenerate from a talk about Republican versus Democrat to black versus white to blood in the streets.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so, again, I think if you know your family's going to have a discussion, I would encourage people to walk into it having a purpose. So is my purpose to have a great discussion with my family, right? Is my purpose to learn opposing views? The best offense is defense, right? And so if that's your purpose, then your behavior should fall in line. So in order for me to hear opposing views or in order for me to have a discussion with my family, they have to remain at the table. So that means no offensive words. It means being able to listen. You know, it means watching my own tone of voice. And so people can agree and disagree. It's about critical thinking skills and how we respond and react to when someone disagrees.
Yeah. We have another caller here that will bring up an issue that I think probably comes up fairly frequently within families. That's inter-family dynamics. Charles in St. Louis, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Don. I'll say it in one word, inheritance.
Inheritance. In what regard? That inheritance, something that has been bequeathed to you or something you have inherited genetically?
No. I'm talking about an elderly parent who has decided she's going to turn over her considerable assets over to one sibling over the other, even though the sibling benefiting from the assets is quite wealthy, and the sibling who is not getting anything is not very well off at all.
This particular topic comes up for me in sessions more than other topics. Yeah. It's very sensitive when you have something like this happens because you can't confront the person who's deceased. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to someone who's passed away in their wishes, they were just that, their wishes and their expectation. So you can't necessarily grapple with that. However, it does become the problem of the person who inherits everything as to what are you going to do with it? So, you know, I mean, when it comes to that particular subject, when we're talking about finances, you have to tread lightly and again, walk into the dinner knowing what is your purpose for the dinner? What will be the purpose of the conversation? And if inheritance is something that has destroyed Thanksgiving dinners before, maybe that the way that conversation comes up may be a part of the ground rules, because the goal is to keep everyone at the table. And if we know that saying you did this for that, then we may want to say, for instance, take out using the word you when you make a statement during the discussion.
You know, money is the subject that really can get people going. I mean, it's so very divisive so many times. Whenever that comes up within a family, who has more and why don't I have more of what you have, you've got problems.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that occurs to me, we've kind of focused our conversation here around the dinner table. But these conversations take place away from the dinner table as well. When dinner is over, before it even starts, things like this will come up.
Absolutely.
You have to deal with them pretty much the same way, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and it's not a bad thing. I think that we must push ourselves to engage in more dialogue, and especially dialogue that is in opposition of our core beliefs. That's the only way that we will start to learn why an individual may have a differing opinion. It's the only way that we'll learn what is the defensive argument for an opposing side. So if we can't engage in the discourse, then it goes nowhere. So I think the fear comes out of what will happen next. Will this ruin the relationship? Will this ruin dinner? Will I lose my best friend? And so when you have those kind of fears around having a discussion, the question is more about what words are you using? How do you talk to people? Because it's not always what you say. It's how you deliver the message. And so there shouldn't be a fear about, you know, things are going to be ruined because we have a conversation. If it gets to that point, then we need to analyze the dynamics of the conversation.
You know, that takes me back to the question about humor of a few moments ago. When people are trying to be funny or think they're being funny, and maybe that's their intention, is just to get a laugh, but they can use a word or bring up a subject in a joke or whatever that can be very insensitive and damaging.
Absolutely. As a psychologist, I understand that sometimes humor is also a defense mechanism. You know, if someone becomes really anxious, they may make a joke as a way to kind of break the tension, or they may laugh at something that may not be funny. So again, it's about what is the intention of the humor or the joke. And if you are offended, you should be able to say, that was slightly offensive because, and either the other person will say, you're right, I get it, or, well, I disagree. And at the end, we can still agree to disagree. It's
okay. That brings up an interesting issue as to when to say and how to say, I'm offended by that. Mm-hmm. How do you say that? I've just told a joke and you're offended by it. Now, react to it.
I would say, oh, that's an interesting joke. I don't think I understood the punchline. Could you explain that for me? Mm-hmm. Or my initial reaction to that was I was a little taken aback, but I don't think that may have been your intent. Can you please explain or clarify? Because I don't want to walk away harboring feelings about a joke if that wasn't your intention.
In other words, should you, if you are offended, announce to the person who has offended you that you are offended?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Yeah. But you have to also know that just by sharing you're offended doesn't mean the person will apologize or doesn't mean they'll take back what they said. It just means that you are advocating for your position and you are sharing your voice that you were offended. And so you should be able to speak up for yourself, also knowing that you may not get the response that you're looking for.
And you've got to watch your tone and your language when you're doing that.
Absolutely. You can't be offensive saying you're offended.
Let's take another call. Donna's joining us from South City. Donna, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to go back to that comment about when the discussion gets offensive to send the children away from the table. I think maybe it would be better to send the people who are being offensive away from the table rather than the children.
Absolutely. Put them in a timeout.
Yes.
Well, you know,
stand in the corner.
It's easier to send the children away than it would be grandpa or dad.
Yes, yeah. It would.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe at least the comment could be made.
What comment do you think would be acceptable in saying to a relative that it's time for you to leave the table?
I think maybe, you know, if you're going to offend other people or upset everyone here, maybe you should take a short walk and come back when you feel more able to be calm.
All right, that sounds pretty good. And Dr. Robinson is nodding in the affirmative. That works for you?
That's a good one. Another technique for me, because of having a passion for human behavior, if there's one individual that tends to trigger everyone else, I become more interested in why this one individual is making the comments they're making. So I get more into their history and their lived experiences, because I think once you understand a person more fully in their full context, you get a little bit more understanding as to why they hold dear to a certain position. And so you shift the conversation away from, you know, quote unquote Trump, and to understand why this one individual is such a staunch supporter that he's making these statements.
See, my inclination would be is not to invite this person. If it's going to be unpleasant and people are going to be offended and the kids are going to have to be sent from the room or not sent from the room, depending on what your approach to that is, you know, why set yourself up for that kind of a time?
Well, I mean, if you're the host, it's your party. You can do what you want. However, if the goal is to have the entire family there, I think maybe having a pre-dinner conversation with this individual and saying, you know, this has happened in the past. The goal for this year is this. These will be the ground rules. And so if you are willing to accept that, we would love to have you. And if not,
that makes the most sense. I mean, that's really the way to do it, the way to approach. One more quick call, this one from Nick in St. Louis. Nick, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You're talking about the people who shake things up at family dinner. I was that person last year. I am a very liberal-minded person, whereas my family is very conservative and Christian. And so last year was the first year I was able to bring my boyfriend to family dinner. And so we've always had this sort of silent agreement that, you know, we don't talk politics, we don't talk our stance on anything. We talk about family memories, we talk about, you know, commonality among all of us. Last year when I asked if I could bring my boyfriend of 7 years at the time to come to family dinner for the first time, it got a little controversial there for a second, but the family ultimately said, you know, we love you, we want you to be happy, so please, you know, bring the person who is making you happy. And so there was no controversy after that. Everyone had a good time, you know, and, you know, shook things up at first, you know, everything has smoothed out, and now I'm happy to have my boyfriend a part of the conservative part of my family.
Good for you.
Thank you so much for that. Well, that's the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah, see, had he never brought it up, he wouldn't have known that his family would have supported him anyway.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We had an anonymous caller here. Sensitivity to loss of a relative caused upset after a funeral. No longer invited to Thanksgiving dinners because of it. So that's the saddest part of the equation when that happens. We only have a minute left. What about making up? This has happened and words have been exchanged. In 45 seconds, tell me how to go about doing it.
It's Thanksgiving. And so while we have a lot of things that can remind us of why our society is in such turmoil, we can should push ourselves to think of at least three things that we're thankful for. And one of those things should be that you were able to leave Thanksgiving dinner loving your family more than when you arrived. And that means no leaving upset.
Sometimes you have to swallow hard.
Sometimes you do. Yeah.
Well, you're absolutely right. That's the way you want to end the day. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Marva Robinson,
thank
for
you
being
for
with us.
Me.
Good advice, as usual. And I hope it's not the kind of advice that people will have to adhere to tomorrow, that everything goes swimmingly
everybody.
I can hardly wait. Thank you so much. Dr. Marva Robinson, a licensed clinical psychologist. Great to have you with us.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, our noon broadcast will be preempted by the Splendid Tables Turkey Confidential. At 10 p.m., we'll have an encore presentation of our discussion with Justin Martin about his biography of Frederick Law Olmsted, the architect of many urban parks, including New York City's Central Park. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Hope you all have a great Thanksgiving Day. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.